What's going on, everybody? Welcome back for another episode of Triggered. This is Triggered, episode number 524 here on Wednesday, July 17th. And it has been a week.
Nothing really happened.
Yeah. Thanks to be to God for the fact that President Trump survived a assassination attempt on Saturday afternoon, as I'm sure you're all aware. It was about a millimeter away from being a very different story. If he had not turned his head, the bullet most certainly would have gone straight into the side of his head and blown his brain out, but thankfully it did not. Our friend Shinzo from above said, "Don, turn your head towards the chart," and that was that.
That's the English translation.
Yeah, sorry, I don't speak Japanese, but really it was just one of the most surreal things that any of us have ever seen. Multiple shots fired at him. We're gonna dig into some of the real serious questions about this in a second. But just the fact that, you know, he came within a millimeter of losing his life and his ear is bleeding. He had just gotten tackled by a Secret Service and then has the balls to get up, not knowing that the shooter or there could be a second shooter, and raise his fist and chant, "Fight, fight, fight." It hands down one of the most iconic photos and moments of the 21st century, really, since, I think you said this the other day. Oh, by the way, Spencer's here. Sorry.
Oh, hey, guys.
Yeah, Spencer's here. Everybody knows Spencer. Everybody loves Spencer.
I was afraid to speak until you introduced me.
Sorry, you know, it's a big moment. I mean, you said the other day, and I totally agree, really the most iconic photo since 9/11.
Yeah.
When George Bush was on top of the pile down at Ground Zero. What's kind of, you know, your initial thoughts, Spencer, on the whole thing? You know, all of us have been doing nonstop work covering this, covering the RNC. Really a moment that kind of, one of the people I follow on Twitter tweeted last night saying it really, that moment, the assassination attempt, bent the arc of history. And I think that's really one of the best ways to sum it up. What are your thoughts?
I mean, yeah, you were talking about it was a millimeter, and you think about the historic potential for the next, not just 4 years, but 8, 16, how many ever years. And you look at what the world in the United States was like while Trump was in office the first time, and you look at what it's been like for the last 3.5 years, and you realize how every president has a legacy, but some of their legacies kick in faster than others. And mm-hmm. you look at what the Biden administration has done in just 3.5 years, and you look at, we have 2 new hot wars, one sort of simmering that could turn into a full-blown war at any time, all the chaos here at home, the open borders, everything that's happened in 3.5 years, and you think about that continuing to happen, or Trump being reelected and then his policies taking over and actually stopping all these wars, bringing peace back, bringing prosperity back to the United States and the rest of the world and all these other things. And just the thought that all of that next 4 years could have been taken away on Saturday is insane.
Yeah.
And again, the photo is, like, all those photos are iconic, but there's the one that I'm thinking of that is, like, the craziest thing ever. And I think ultimately it goes to the fact that, like, images of strength and power resonate, and images of weakness and whatever, everything else Joe Biden's done for 4 years, like, that's not inspiring to any, like, seeing him fall down at, where was he, the Air Force Academy or whatever, like, all the, like,
Air Force One steps.
Theoretically, like, yeah, the President of the United States being on the ground is kind of notable.
Yeah.
But, like, that doesn't inspire anybody to be happy.
No.
Mm-hmm. And people want to see... The reason George W. Bush at Ground Zero, why that is... And between that picture at Ground Zero when he's there with the bullhorn and the firefighters and the first responders, and then the clip of him throwing the perfect strike, like, how many ever days later... Like, those are the pictures, because it shows, what it is a middle finger to everybody who hates us, that you can't keep us down, and you're not going to scare us into, you know, going away and shutting up, and that's exactly what he did. And again, the training that protectees get, which is not, like, formal training, but, like, the Secret Service, when they're protecting somebody, they explain to them, if everything hits the fan, here's what we need you to do, and we're going to handle the rest. Trump was not supposed to get up on his own, was not supposed to stick his head out from around the agents, was not supposed to raise any part of his body above what they could protect. And
you mean the fat Secret Service chicks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, he didn't have to stand up over some of them, okay? But, like, you're basically supposed to just be this ball and just, like, stay as low and as close, keep all your extremities in as close to you as possible so you don't get hit by anything else.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I mean, Trump had probably heard, maybe he did. I mean, at that moment, who knows if he's even thinking straight. Clearly he was. But, like, he had heard one of the agents yell that the shooter was down, mm-hmm. but he didn't know that it was over. For all he knew, there were three other shooters in the crowd that right. were waiting for him to get up and then finish him off. And that didn't matter to him. He knew that the image being him hitting the deck, getting tackled, and then being basically thrown in the back of an SUV was not what anybody needed to see to have any confidence.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he had to show them that he was there, he knew what was going on, he was okay, and everything else. And he did exactly that.
It was balls. I mean, it's, you know, the someone summed it up as, you know, the resiliency of the American spirit. And I mm-hmm. thought that was a great summary as well. What do you think, Matt?
Well, I mean, getting back to iconic images and showing, you know, showing, you know, signs of strength and stuff. I mean, go back to Carter. I mean, him being gassed and passing out during a 5K with the Secret Service and them yeah. holding him up and stuff. I mean, that just totally, that was also like one of the many death knells to his presidency. So, and then, you know, Joe Biden going to Nevada yesterday and just going totally off the rails, mm-hmm. losing his train of thought multiple times. To the point where even pretty liberal reporters couldn't defend it anymore. Like, this guy, they're like, this guy can't campaign anymore.
No.
And, yep. you know, we have that juxtaposed with Trump, who is going to the convention every day, you know, bandaged.
And clearly, you know, yeah. he's also bruised yeah. from the tackling of the yeah. Secret Service of yeah. him to the ground. Tackled so hard that it blew his shoes off, which yeah. I thought, you know, was one yeah. of the funnier moments in retrospect here. Now we can actually laugh about yeah. this. Yeah, he says, let me get my shoes. But, you know, if that had happened to Biden, Biden might have died from the impact of the Secret Service guys.
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely would have broken something.
Absolutely.
Yeah. yeah. You know, and obviously we're thrilled that President Trump is okay and survived the attack. Unfortunately, one of great American Trump supporter, Corey Compitore, lost his life.
Yeah.
A former firefighter chief for Butler or one of the towns nearby. And some of the things that have been said out of the left about him are just outright vile, so we're not going to go through that.
Yeah.
But he died a hero. He was covering his wife and his daughters from the gunfire. President Trump called his widow, I believe, either this morning or last night, and talked to her. President Trump is expected to attend the funeral later this week. Two other attendees were hit. One of them was Ronnie Jackson's nephew.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so much that can be discussed here. But what I really want to talk about now is the Secret Service.
Oh.
And how this happened in the first place. Because yeah. As the days go by, the more and more we find out about this, you know, I don't want to be a very big conspiracy theory person on this, but there is a lot of questions. There's a lot of suspicious circumstances, activity,
yeah.
reporting. You know, the shooter, I don't want to spend a lot of time on the shooter because, you know, I don't like to do that, but a 20-year-old kid, and, you know, they were quick to trot out the fact that he's, air quote, a registered Republican, which most likely was just to interfere in our primaries. Donated to a progressive organization in the past on the day of Joe Biden's inauguration. Then they go and say, oh, well, he doesn't have much of a social media presence. I'm sure that was after they scrubbed it. You know,
they couldn't access the phone. Remember that?
Well, and they couldn't access the phone, which is totally fucking bullshit, ridiculous. But the Secret Service here is to blame for this. Multiple levels of failure, no accountability, no answers, no evidence, no testimony, nothing.
Nope. Yeah.
The director of the Secret Service, this dumb bitch, what's her name?
Cheadle,
goes on TV, takes no responsibility.
While saying the buck stops with her.
Correct. Blames the fact that the roof was sloped.
Yeah. Very which dangerous.
Which it wasn't even that sloped of a roof. It's like maybe 10 degrees.
Basically, every roof that's not like an flat. Adobe home in yes. New Mexico
yeah.
is...
Yeah.
yeah.
You don't have flat roofs for
reasons. And so she blames that. Joe Biden doesn't even know his Secret Service director is a woman. Goes on TV and says, "I've talked to him." Well, sorry, Joe.
Who are you talking to?
Yeah, right.
I mean,
initially, the Secret Service was somewhat responding to questions from reporters.
But then DHS stepped in.
Yes. Yep.
And said, "No, you can't talk."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so now, thankfully, they're subpoenaing them. But ultimately, that's not a solution because they can defy the subpoena. They can be held in contempt of Congress. The DOJ will not do anything about
it. Whole circus all over again.
The one bright spot is that Speaker Mike Johnson said he's putting together essentially a, you know, I don't want to say 9/11 style commission, but a task force to investigate what actually happened here and to get the evidence. But how have we not seen photos of
the rifle,
the shell casings, the rifle, diagrams of how this happened? You know,
I mean, they've held no pressers about this, obviously. You know, it's just,
no, the only press conference they had was that night at 11:45 where they answered no questions whatsoever. They even refused to identify the shooter, even though they knew for hours who it was. The only reason it came out was because of New York Post.
Yeah, and they also wouldn't – somebody asked them – which is like an obvious question, but was good that they asked it because then we got their answer. But the reporter asked, "Do you view this as a failure of security?" And they said, "We're not going to get into that." And I'm like, the former president, likely the next president, was just shot in the head. Three people were hit. One of them died. Two of them are critically injured at that moment. And you can't say that that was a failure?
No,
like, what is not, if that's not a failure for sure, then like, what would the failure have been? Like, the entire town of Butler exploded? Like, what would they consider?
I want to know, what do you have to do in the Biden administration to get fired? Because, as Trump said in the debate, who have you fired, Joe? What do you have to do in that administration to get fired? I think we can only, we were talking about the show here, can only remember one person in the administration that got fired.
Like, and a mid-level comm staffer who just accidentally did the worst possible thing
a day after
Joe Biden said he would fire people for doing that.
Literally, basically, nothing important.
That was TJ Ducklow, right?
People that have destroyed this country, that almost got President Trump killed, no accountability, no responsibility, no one fired.
Well, she has the ultimate Trump card, Cheadle.
Why?
Because apparently Jill Biden was the one who pushed her appointment.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's a shot.
There you go, right? Oh, Rasputin behind the scenes.
Was that just yesterday I covered that? Yeah. She was, so she's served in the Secret Service for like more than almost three decades, I guess, before. Uh-huh. And then took a corporate, like, global security job with PepsiCo. And then was brought back because she was working on a detail when Biden was vice president and got to be friends with Jill Biden and some of her inner circle people. And so they pushed for her to be – and it's not a Senate-confirmed position, so they can hire whoever they want.
Yep.
And so they picked her because of – they, like, liked working with her. But And the senior advisor that was – to Jill Biden, who was really pushing it, has no, like, security background. So has no idea what you look for and has no business making a decision on who the best person is.
Yeah.
And
no surprise there.
That's how you get July 13th.
Yeah, which, by the way, July 13th, of course, way worse than January 6th as far as an attack on our democracy.
Yeah.
then we find out, and, you know, it's hard to keep track of all this in order here, but just going through, as I recall, then we find out that previous to Saturday's terrible events, Iran, there was credible intelligence that Iran was going to try to kill President Trump, and that the failure in security that we had on Saturday was with the increased security package.
Yeah.
Okay? We're lucky that it was not a fucking Iranian sniper on the top of that building, because if it wasn't some fucking little kid who didn't know really what he was doing but got really close to blowing Trump's head off, this would not be the episode we'd be having today. Yeah. And also, the country would be pretty much burning at the seams at this point, because we came within a millimeter of a civil war, is what it comes down to. You know, we don't want to talk about the what-ifs, but the what-if on that would have been unfathomable.
Yeah.
And you know, we've been talking about this for a long time here on Triggered, that their last resort was this, that it would one day probably come down to this. And, you know, we all, of course, were praying that it wouldn't happen, but it did. And thank God, it you know, only nicked his ear.
Yeah.
But how did this happen in the first place? The local police notified the Secret Service that not only were they going to be unable to secure the building, but that this shooter was there and walking around and using a range finder to estimate the range to the
hours
podium.
Hours before
opening fire. Walking around with a ladder and a gun bag. I mean, I just don't understand how this happened.
And it was flagged as a vulnerability days before the rally by the Secret Service, and they just kept it open. And then there were snipers inside the building when this was going down, and then, they waited 2 minutes. They you know, mm-hmm. a full 2 minutes before, crooks opened fire. It's just,
And not to put the tinfoil hat on, but, sometimes my gut tells me things, and it's correct, and my gut's telling me here that someone inside dropped the ball, either potentially purposefully or in the utmost negligible way. Negligence, I guess, would be the correct word there. But it's very suspicious that all of these failures happen stacked like this. And not only that, then we find out that the reason that they were so understaffed was because he was still on former presidential level of security, right?
With a slight increase for the assassination threat from Iran.
Yes, but it was the weekend before the RNC, which, when he officially gets the nomination, goes back up to full presidential security level, essentially, mm-hmm. or major party nominee level, which is pretty close to full presidential level. So the timing a little suspicious there. And that we learned that the manpower was drawn down by the First Lady, who was having an event pretty close to where Trump was. So it there's just a lot here, and you see videos of the security team failing to be able to get through a fence.
That was bad.
Much failure, so astounding. And then the cops, the motorcycle cops who assisted on that day, the local Pittsburgh cops, one of the town's local, I don't know if it was Butler itself or someone local, they were reprimanded for doing so. I mean, what is going on here? I don't understand how we're now, 5 days removed from this and have no answers.
Right.
None.
Yeah.
None. Just none. And they refuse to answer them, too.
Yeah, and the rooftop vulnerability is the predominating question in terms of how they left it open. It's less than 200 yards from the stage.
Uh-huh.
And it's not it's an easy shot to make. Every single ex-sniper that's been interviewed is this is not a difficult shot.
How do you let a rooftop 120 yards from the former president, perhaps future president, with the high ground, direct line of sight, be unsecured?
That they said that they knew was a potential location.
If in the report.
If somebody was going to try to attack, they would probably use that rooftop. And I think...
Didn't even sweep it either.
No. And according to some more reporting based on what the feds are saying, they are saying it's confirmed that there was a team inside the building on top of which the shot came from. And so you, again, it's nice that you knew that the area was a potential risk, but if you're inside the building and not on the roof, and then there's other reporting that one of the officers in the team that was in the building saw the ladder and climbed up the ladder and saw the shooter, and then he turned around to shoot at him, so he went back down the ladder
because the officer didn't have a gun
and pulled I don't know why you would stab
an event that might have saved Trump's life.
The only reason is because the guy may have been lining up the perfect shot, noticed somebody coming up, turned around, got distracted enough, realized that he was about to get
had to reset
nailed, and had to spin around and quick fire off those shots, and so that might be the only reason Trump survived. But I think on the whole, tinfoil beanie situation, the government in basically every attack or bad situation that happens, it turns out to be just a colossal failure of government.
Yeah.
And talking about how did all of these things happen? Where now we know that the shooter's parents had called police a couple hours before he attacked the rally saying, our son is missing and we're nervous. But you look at all of these failures that are happening, and I think the safe assumption based on just history since the year 2000 here between state and federal and local police departments and authorities and the people who are supposed to be keeping us safe and everything that happened on Saturday, it seems pretty apparent that these kind of failures happen quite regularly, but only when so many of the mess-ups happen consecutively in a close period of time does it end in a situation like this. Because you look at, obviously, a lot has changed since 9/11. But before 9/11, obviously there were a lot of pieces of information that weren't being shared among different agencies in the intelligence community and federal law enforcement and state and local. But only when all of those things lined up and we just had no idea what was going on was 9/11 able to be pulled off. But obviously the problems that existed on 9/11 existed in the years before that, and because there weren't subsequent other failures, there was never a major attack, and we were able to thwart some of those. And you look at, you know, everything since then, Boston Marathon bombing, all of these things, it's just a massive failure. So you don't need to be a conspiracy theorist to agree that the federal government is bad at its job, because ultimately it's a clunky, ineffective bureaucracy that needs to move quickly and everything else, and it just can't. And so you have the local police, you know, not putting two and two together that, like, hey, there's a kid who's missing and his parents are concerned. You don't have seemingly anybody noticing somebody walking in with, like, a rangefinder, a long gun, a ladder that he had bought that day, and think, this is fishy, and maybe run it up the pole. We have the videos of people there a little too late, maybe, all pointing and, you know, saying what's going on. But it's just everything happened in a waterfall cascade thing that ended with Donald Trump getting shot in the head.
Yeah, I mean, and supposedly just minutes ago, the briefing of senators by the Secret Service wrapped up, and Ron Johnson says that they basically refused to answer questions. Four questions were asked. They didn't list what they were. No answers. And that they should submit their questions in writing.
Yeah.
The fuck is
this? What the hell is this?
And so I believe the House is going to issue a subpoena to that bitch Cheadle, right?
They did already.
Is it out? Yeah. Mike Johnson, at least, stepping up. You know, everyone knows how I feel about him, but he's been solid the past few weeks. So hopefully he can get to the bottom of this, because this is just ridiculous that we have no answers, no evidence, no photos, no testimony, nothing, 5 days after they almost killed President Trump. It's really just, I don't understand how this is being allowed to happen right now. But so... And the other thing, what?
And another thing.
The snipers, the fucking counter snipers, had this guy in their sight
for 2 minutes at least.
Yeah. At least 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Why do you let him take a shot first? You see, he has a gun. He's on a roof. The president's right there. Also, why don't you at least pull the president off the stage? I mean, you had the whole crowd screaming that there's a guy on the roof with a gun.
Yeah.
The whole crowd. I mean, it's just there's too many coincidences here that some crazy shit was going on here. And, like, you know, I forget who we were just talking about the movie Shooter. You know, I'm not saying, but like, you know, like, there's something going on here. And maybe it was because 2 days earlier, Trump said he'd released the JFK files and the CIA got upset. But, like, you know, not allegedly.
Lord Jesus.
Listen, the CIA took out one president before. They'll do it again.
Hey, Spencer, the babushka lady was there, too.
You know? fucking JFK got his head blown off because of the CIA. So,
where's the umbrella man?
But, like, really, this has been the mission of the Secret Service since JFK to ensure that no other president died. They almost got Reagan. Right? But at least secure the rooftops and open windows against a sniper shot. There's a whole thing that goes into surveying, like you said, the scene. And they go out way ahead of time on the advance team and look at this. And they identified this very rooftop as the most unsecure point and the riskiest point for an attack on the protectee. Well, and they still didn't secure it.
Apparently, this has been a problem with the agency for months. I mean, back I think NBC News, back in April or May, there was multiple memos that were leaked about deficiency in training and preparedness and stuff like that that was permeating the agency. So
all I've got to say, I mean, is when Corey Mills, a representative, a great representative on our side, says the same things I'm saying about this is very suspicious. How do all these things fail? You know, there's multiple levels here of failure that are all designed to be independent of another, so that if one fails, it's not a catastrophic failure.
Yeah.
And they all seem to collapse. And so we, I think as Americans, are our responsibility to ask questions. What is going on here?
Yeah.
Why did this happen? You know,
the agency, you know, that's meant to protect the president is not talking about their failures.
If you can't admit that you failed, then I don't care about anything else that you say, because that tells me everything else that you're about to tell us and lawmakers and whoever else is going to be a lie based on hiding the fact that you failed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, just the fact you that they're trotting out.
Like, hey, when one of our protectees gets shot in the head, that's a failure.
That's a failure.
Like, that's, you're not, that is, like, literally, yeah, maybe, granted, the Secret Service has a lot of other duties, and they protect other people and everything, but, like, your number one duty as the Secret Service, theoretically, is to not let the president get shot in the head.
Yeah.
The fact that they're trotting out these blatant lies as the excuses. The sloped roof is the worst of them all. Yeah.
I can't believe that they went, like, who, again, was that something that she just pulled out of thin air in the moment because she was scrambling? Or did somebody come up with that ahead of time to be like, hey, if they ask you, just tell them the rope, or the roof was sloped.
Yeah. I think that she just made that up.
Like,
I think she made that up.
Can possibly think, like, granted all of us are, like, communicators and commentators for a living, but, like, how do they not have a better, if you're going to lie,
that's just disdain.
Come
for
up with, yes, that's assuming
it,
like,
it really
well,
is.
If the Secret Service gives a reason, then the American people will trust it. No, we don't. You just let the president get shot in the head.
Yeah.
And there are, again, so many questions about this specific incident and why, you know, why was the Secret Service only responsible for the area that was inside the perimeter once you got through a checkpoint? Why were they, you know, why did they wait so long to take the shot? All these things.
Well, the local police are in charge of that building, but the local police not only ahead of time notified the Secret Service they didn't have the manpower to protect it, but then they notified the Secret Service on an open tactical channel that there was a shooter there.
Yes. So, like, again, it's not – and the Secret Service tried to scapegoat local law enforcement, which is not a great idea because
they're all Trump-supporting people in Butler County.
Right, and I also covered this earlier, but the Fraternal Order of Police, their president released a statement explaining that anywhere the Secret Service goes, they're relying on state and local – because the Secret Service, just, it's impossible for them to have enough people to do this all on their own.
Yep.
And by throwing the people on who they depend under the bus and attacking them and trying to blame them for something when they did their job and told the Secret Service what the vulnerabilities were and that there was a threat there and the Secret Service didn't do it, only, like, weakens that relationship that should right now theoretically needs to be stronger than it's ever been because we have, you know, months of an election cycle left with two candidates, two vice presidents, all the other people out.
Mm-hmm.
And all the Secret Service is doing is making local and state law enforcement not want to have anything to do with the Secret Service because it's the exact same thing as demonizing police after the summer of 2020 is nobody wants to work for that. Nobody wants to have a part in it. Because they know if anything goes wrong, even if they do everything right, they're going to be the ones that get blamed. They're going to be the ones whose heads are on the spike for the Biden administration. And it's just no good. But there are these larger questions still about the Secret Service as an entity. They've had scandals before, whatever. But look at what has happened. And I think this goes to why the current director has to go. Because we have no faith in her ability to handle this. We have no faith in her ability to tell the truth, which is critical. We have no faith in her ability to get her agency in line. But all these things, I mean, she came in and instituted this DEI policy about we need to have whatever, 30% women agents. And are there really strong, badass women who could be amazing Secret Service agents?
Sure.
Absolutely. Sure. But how is the Secret Service implementing this 30% goal? And does that mean that there's just everybody who applies, who identifies as a woman, is immediately jumping to the front of the line and you're keeping people out who are more qualified just because they happen to have a penis? And that is a really bad way to run an agency and a really good way to get presidents killed.
Frankly,
well, did you not notice?
When you're tasked with protecting the President of the United States, that type of shit cannot be considered whatsoever.
It should always be whoever is the right person for the job and qualified and everything.
The whole protective detail, I think, was like, what, maybe 30, 40% women.
Yeah.
Women who are clearly way shorter than Trump, so not as sure how they're expected to make a protective bubble around him, which is
exactly
a key tactic. And watch the video. These women can't barely even fucking holster their handgun.
Yeah, it's not very good. Yeah,
I mean,
it's a disaster.
And then that goes back to the training thing. I was reading earlier, I don't know who said it, but they undergo like 30 minutes of training a year once they're an approved agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's not necessarily about the women that were on Trump's detail on Saturday being women and being the pro. If there was some short king, a little guy, it would also be like, hey, maybe for the tall protectees, we put the tall agents
tall
with them.
On there. Yeah,
the 6'3 president.
Like, the ultimate, like, the Secret Service, generally the idea is, well, we thought it was to prevent an attack from happening in the first place with its partners. But then if something does go down, the default is they use their bodies to shield the president. And it's just like, it is not about anybody's chromosomes or gender identity or any of that nonsense. It's about, is their body big enough to cover one of the taller presidents we've had in recent
years?
Who's like not a small guy.
Tall guy.
It's paramount.
And like, I wouldn't want a short guy in the detail either. And we saw at the RNC on the first night when Trump came in, they quickly
figured out those bitches were gone.
Absolute.
Yeah. That was
all guys surrounding
and I bet you that was specifically Trump's, like, get him out of here. And no more.
Serious. I mean, what if Trump wins? I mean, do we just trust this agency? Does he? I wonder how he feels.
Oh, there will be a clean out. If
no, I'm trying happens. To say. I mean, obviously, I trust clean out, but whoever he picks as
the new director would quickly come in and roll some common sense and actually.
The only agents who did their job on Saturday, there's three Secret Service dudes that I know from seeing pictures and videos of the president for a very long time have been on his detail essentially since he left office.
Okay.
And they did a great job, but everyone else failed. And that's only in the inner bubble there with, you know, his body men, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then you have the multiple bubbles, the multiple levels of protection out. The levels outside of that all failed. Half of the inner bubble failed. It's just a shocking failure from the Secret Service. And
they don't want to say anything.
Well, the fact that they're hiding from this is all the more suspicious, and they're trotting out these totally ridiculous lies as excuses.
Sloped.
The fucking sloped. White House roof is sloped.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have counter snipers on the rooftop every single day at the White House.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I do think, obviously, just looking at the record of the 4 years Trump was in office, and he wasn't shot in the head compared to now. It seems like the Secret Service was better then. But I worked in my previous position, worked at a number of situations and events where either the president, the vice president, or some other Secret Service protectee was speaking. And I was there and went through and did all of the advanced walkthroughs like you were talking about earlier when they're preparing for an event like this. And the level of thoroughness, is thoroughness a word? Mm-hmm. It is now.
Yeah.
The level of thoroughness, sounds too many syllables, that the Secret Service people that I worked with during the Trump years was insane.
Oh, yeah.
And they would see like a loose corner on a ceiling tile somewhere in like the kitchen of a hotel in downtown DC.
Yep.
And be like, how long has it been like that? Where does that lead? Thinking that like maybe somebody's crawling through the air vents or whatever.
Yep.
And I'm like, to have the failures, again, multiple failures that we saw on Saturday, just seems like insane, especially when they were told, hey, there's a rooftop with a clear line of sight to the podium.
Just like insane, unbelievable.
And you have to always. I think it might have been Biden who said it, or maybe one of the FBI agents at the first press conference. But it's like they have a no fail mission. Like if you fail,
you know,
chaos. You can't. It's not like you're the. I can't think of another like example of a
NASA
agency or director. Well, I mean, same. Where it's like if you're the guy in charge of getting the rocket off the ground, without blowing up. If the rocket blows up, you failed.
You failed.
Yeah,
or,
for sure.
You know, like, I don't know.
No bullshit. Well, it got 50 feet before it blew up.
Yeah, like, no. Yeah. It's either you did it or you didn't.
Yeah.
And they didn't. And now somebody has to be accountable, but nobody is. And even the other crazy, just, like, makes no sense part of this is after this happened, you had the White House, Secretary Mayorkas himself speaking in the White House briefing on Monday, saying he has 100% support or 100% confidence in the Secret Service and its leadership. And it's like, well, first of all, how can you say that? Because Biden ordered this supposedly independent review of everything that happened to figure out where it went wrong. But if you're already saying before the review has started that you have 100% confidence in them, and if you're the director of the Secret Service saying that it wasn't a failure, before you're already telling me that whatever the review finds, which seemingly is going to be a lot of mess-ups, that you've already made up your mind you're not going to take any accountability because you've already decided nothing went wrong and you should have 100% confidence in them, when I don't think anybody does now.
No.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, thank God that President Trump not only survived, but seems to be doing very well.
Yeah.
But now it turns to, we need some real fucking answers about what happened here. And the fact that the Secret Service and DHS and the Biden administration are trying to hide it, only raises even more questions about what happened here.
Yeah, might not be a crime. It could just be incompetence. But the cover-up is worse than the crime or the no crime that got us here. Because you're treating us, as Vespa said, with disdain. You think the stupid American people don't understand. Even though it's like, well, I understand that you're supposed to prevent the president from getting shot in the head.
Transparency is what we need here.
It's pretty straightforward. And never forget, I point this out in like every story I write, because every story I write in the last 2 weeks has been the Biden administration screwing something up. Mm-hmm. But on day one, Jen Psaki, in her first White House press briefing on January 20th, 2021, or whatever it was, said that the Biden administration was there to return transparency and truth to government. And they have literally never once told the truth, never once been transparent. All they do is hide, obfuscate, try to throw people in the wrong direction while treating us all like we're too dumb to see that they're doing this to us, and it's on everything. I made this point whenever I was on Fox last, like last weekend or whatever. It's the exact same thing. It's like the border crisis is not happening. The border is secure. It's closed. It's under operational control. Yeah, inflation, there's no inflation. Hunter Biden's laptop, not real. Cannot tell the truth.
The president is the healthiest he's ever been.
Yes.
We call it the "Don't Believe Your Lying Eyes" campaign.
Yes.
Yeah, it's literally what they do.
But all those lies, it helps when you have a legacy media that helps foster all that and protects the president.
Well, and we didn't even really get to talk about the veil
of secrecy was couldn't be penetrated, regarding his mental health decline.
We didn't really get to talk about the liberal media reaction to the assassination attempt, because that is a whole nother thing. I mean,
talk about the real tinfoil people. We're just sitting here asking, why did we not know this was going to happen and why didn't we prevent it? Yeah. And are supposedly the conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
The mainstream media and Democrats
think it was staged.
Absolutely.
That he wasn't shot. The bandage is too big. That they're faking the injury. Yeah, the bandage is fake.
Showing the iconic image is photoganda.
And then it helps Trump.
Yeah, you can't let people, again, don't believe your lying eyes. We can't even let them see the picture. The photo.
Well, then you could go level down, because then if you go past that, there's the, what a shame that the shooter missed people. Oh,
yeah.
That's the really bad one, too. Yeah.
Oh, it's a Russian plot. That was Putin's advisor sent an email to the media saying, well, this is exactly what Putin does all the time to win elections. And then he had to apologize when it all got leaked, but still.
Ridiculous. Yeah, it's sick, and,
puppies out there.
We all know that they're upset that Trump wasn't killed.
They've literally been fantasizing about this since 2015.
Yeah, basically. They've been calling for it. I mean, go to the clips. CNN, MSNBC.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Biden said
Victoria Nuland had an op-ed basically saying that we need to kill Trump like 2 weeks ago.
Biden said it's time to put Trump in the crosshair.
Oh, yeah. Bullseye. Oh, yeah.
And then he denied saying crosshairs.
Yeah.
I think maybe he's not senile. He's actually brilliant, and his whole plan is just to make it impossible to criticize him, because nothing he says makes any sense.
Well, and then, of course, getting into the whole lowering the temperature.
Oh, my God.
And the second I started hearing that, and even hearing that from the Republican side as well, I could not disagree more. I think that they just tried to kill our fucking guy.
Yeah.
And it is not on us to, quote, lower the temperature.
Yeah.
If anything, we should be raising the temperature because guess what? This goes back a long ways, even a little, quite a bit before Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. Bush was Hitler. Yeah. Cheney was Hitler. Romney was Hitler. Romney's going to put y'all back in chains. You remember that one?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Trump was Hitler. Trump's a Russian agent. Trump's a threat to the country. Trump's a threat to the nation and our democracy.
And all of a sudden, it's why are they killing this guy?
Well. And then you have the Charlottesville hoax, the Charlottesville lie, which Biden repeated on Monday after, on Saturday, calling to, quote, lower the temperature. He went right back to his raising the temperature. Mm-hmm. They villainize Trump supporters. They say we're all racist. They say we're terrible people. They say we want to, kill women and this and that. They have been doing this for the better part of 20 years now.
He did it in Michigan. Trump is a threat to the country.
Oh, they faked the Wittenberg Convention. Yeah. I mean, all of this that they have done, and then they have the gall that, this happens and they say, oh, no. We need unity and to lower the temperature.
Yeah.
Fuck you, in the words of Andrew Breitbart.
Yeah.
This is war.
Yeah.
And we are not going to back down, and we're going to continue to fight. I love that at the RNC, fight, fight, fight has been a recurring chant. Every time that happens, I can't get a fucking enough of it, because these people want you dead. Look what they just tried to do to the president this weekend.
Yeah.
They want to do that to every single conservative in this country. And don't let anyone persuade you otherwise, because that is what they want to do. And they're the ones who will use the government to attack you. They will weaponize the agencies. They'll weaponize the judicial system. We've seen them do it to Trump. And as Trump has said, and it never been more true than right now, and particularly on Saturday, he's the one standing in the way of them getting to us.
Yeah.
And thank God that he survived this. And I thought that Trump seemed very introspective on Monday night at the RNC.
It looked like there may have been some tears in his eyes.
Oh, he was definitely emotional. I totally agree with that. Trump Jr. was emotional. You could definitely see tears in his eyes. Mm-hmm. I was emotional. I'm like, who's cutting the onions?
Emotional. Sarah Huckabee Sanders last night. You could,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And if thinking of what it must have been like to be Donald Trump walking into that arena, like hours at that point, still after he came within a millimeter of being
barely 2 days,
And, like, imagine what that, like, everything that he's done and been through. And he loves a crowd, and he loves Americans, obviously. Like, that's been apparent since he came down the escalator. That was apparent even before he was running for president or in politics.
Mm-hmm.
But you think about how much he loves that, how much he cares about the country and what he wants to do, seeing how far downhill it's gone in 3.5 years, and realizing that he came within a second of never having the chance to do any of that and walking into that arena and literally, like, the roof blowing off of it with the cheers.
Yep.
Like, that has to be the most insane experience to have. And then sitting there and listening to all the speakers talk about what you mean. It's one of those, how they always say, like, your obituary is the nicest thing anybody ever says.
Yeah.
We should start saying that before people are gone. Like, having the opportunity, and I feel like a lot of the speakers
have been
that, taking that opportunity
and
just reminding him and the rest of the country, who's, for those who, I don't know how they haven't, but the people who haven't made up their minds, reminding them of everything that he is and stands for and has done and will do, is just, like, has made the convention a whole new level of powerful in that way.
Oh, 100%. And so, you know, the first night he seemed very kind of, you know, muted and grateful. I thought he had kind of an air of gratitude around him,
mm-hmm.
just thankful to even be there. Definitely a little emotional. Last night he seemed more like himself. He was really smiling, like almost, I don't know that I've ever seen him smile like that.
No, I don't think so.
And so I think he's just grateful to be alive, and he's definitely more committed to than ever to the fight.
Yeah.
And I think that everybody on our side is not only more committed than ever to the fight, but particularly in the past few days, and we're going to get into kind of some of what's been happening at the RNC. You know, me personally, I think you guys would agree with it, never been more proud to be an American and a Republican. And the, you know, the happiness at this convention, I think, is kind of just exuberance that Trump not only lived, but we are, you know, feel like we're ready to fight for a new day here in America.
Yeah.
We feel like we're winning this battle with the Democrats, and that they are now so desperate that they would try to kill President Trump. Their lawfare has failed. We said it would probably happen. It has happened. Every single case has fallen apart. The documents case was just dismissed on Monday.
Yeah.
The Jan 6th case is in tatters. The Georgia case is in tatters. The bullshit New York case is going to the Court of Appeals in New York. They have failed. And as soon as that all failed, what happened? They tried to kill him. Just like we predicted they would. I mean, they're following the playbook here, and they're desperate. They know they're losing. They know they're the bad guys.
Yeah.
We're now the ones with the positive message, the positive vision for America, and they really are desperate. And you can tell they know they're going to lose.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the second wave of Biden shit that we got going on here, because it really picked up steam today.
Oh, and I think Biden, and even we had talked about it, thought that the events of Saturday may have been what Biden needed to actually survive.
Yeah. And it did stop for a couple days.
Yeah, it did. It was dead quiet.
But man, oh man, the people, whether it's Obama and Pelosi or other people in the Democratic Party who are the real ones clearly calling the shots and all this, they do not care. They want
to go. Yeah, there was a new slate of polls, and it was just devastating. I mean, Virginia, I can't remember the last time Virginia was a battleground state.
No, it's been a while.
It's been since, what, 2004?
Like,
because Obama won it twice.
Since before I knew Virginia existed, probably.
Hillary Clinton won it, so it's been like a decade plus, and now, like, Trump is either tied or slightly leading. You know, they basically have given up on the Sun Belt gains. They think that Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin are their path back to the White House. And Trump is leading in all three of those states, with Pennsylvania, which is usually a cruel mistress to Republicans, you know, being the most likely of the trio to flip. If that happens, that is that's the ballgame.
Well, and I think they also saw the Lester Holt interview on NBC News realized again that, like, this none of which, again, we have been reporting and saying since Joe Biden was running for president in 2019 and 2020 that he is not there.
Yeah.
But they are, after finally pretending to be shocked by this information, are realizing that, like, no, there are no flukes. These are all disasters.
Yeah.
he's a disaster,
yeah.
and there's nothing it can do about it. But his like the last this week after Saturday, like his public appearances, quotes, press conferences, interviews, everything has been bad.
Yeah. I mean, you can do a drinking game now with anytime he says anyways.
If you want to kill yourself, maybe.
I still think that he's not going anywhere, but I will say that it really died down, and now the percentages have gone back up.
Yeah.
But even if he does go anywhere, it's going to be Kamala, to pull a Joe Biden and whisper, it's going to be Kamala.
Yeah.
There's no way that they're going to find anybody else. Trump has become, not to say unbeatable, but has taken such hold of the presidential race that anyone that they put up this point will be a sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyone. Gavin Newsom, you could go down the list and they will lose. And the only way that they keep the money that's dedicated so far to the Biden-Harris campaign is to have Kamala be the lead. And if it's Kamala, guess what? We'll fucking beat her dumb ass too.
Yes, sure.
I don't give a fuck who it is at this point. We're winning this election in November.
Yeah.
Because there's – I refuse to entertain the possibility that we're not going to. We were just talking about this last night, Spence. If we lose this election, I'm done. I'm out on this. I'm out on politics.
Yeah.
This is it. This is the last chance. And I just can't take another one of these because it's the only option. It is the only option here. You've seen what they want to do to us. They've tried to kill President Trump. You think they'll stop there? You're crazy. And it's really the only option. And I think we'll beat anybody. I really do at this point. I don't see how Trump is going to lose this election. Now, were they going to try to cheat? Sure.
Yeah.
But guess what? If they change the candidate at this point, they're going to have to print a lot more of those fake Chinese ballots. And we have also a very interesting thing coming up on September 30th. The congressional funding runs out, or the national funding runs out through Congress. And there's been some rumblings that the hardcore, hardline Republicans in Congress are going to try to attach the Banning Illegals from Voting Act, so you could see a showdown there.
Nice.
Now, illegals are technically already banned from voting, but we all know how that goes.
Yes.
Just in Georgia, I think they found, 1,600 illegals who voted last election?
Yeah.
You know, in a state that could be decided by even a margin smaller than that, it matters a lot.
Yeah.
But I really do think that the margins are going to be too big to rig, as Trump likes to say. And we're going to talk about the polls as we wrap up the show. But first, I want to get to Trump making his vice presidential pick.
Mm-hmm.
After long speculation and wait, it was really an episode of The Apprentice.
It really was.
J.D. Vance has been named the running mate for Donald Trump in this election. I think it's a very strong pick. I mean, we've talked about this in the past. I thought, you know, I personally thought there were a few other options that I maybe would have liked more. But I think that J.D. Vance, if you look at it from Trump's point of view, made the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think he didn't pick Youngkin because he didn't want Youngkin to be taller than him. But
I honestly, I can't tell if you're joking, but I don't think that's a joke. I'm sure
I think it's definitely a thought. It's definitely a thought, 100%.
Yeah.
I am surprised you picked J.D. Vance because Trump notoriously does not like facial hair.
Mm.
But yeah, Senator from Ohio, J.D. Vance, of course, wrote the book Hillbilly Elegy, which was turned into a hit movie. I think it was the number one movie on Netflix right after he was picked, and now I think went down to number four. Former Marine, Ohio State University grad, and Yale Law grad, which of course Trump loves that level of education.
Mm-hmm.
He's young, which I really like.
Yes.
39 years old. Brings some youth to the ticket, could appeal to youth voters, especially in the Rust Belt.
Mm-hmm.
He, I think, is going to be a bulldog out there fighting. We all know he's going to shred Kamala to absolute bits in the VP debate.
That's going to be so. She's going to be yelling about Venn diagrams and coconuts and trees.
Unburdened by the past. Time. Yeah,
the bus goes here, the bus goes there, because that's what buses do.
Yeah, well, you know, and she's notoriously a terrible debater, except for when she destroyed Joe Biden to his face, which was ironic. August 12th, Monday, August 12th, will be the VP debate. It's coming soon, just weeks away. And so I think that J.D. Vance has a real opportunity to do something special here. I think he's going to spend a ton of time in the Rust Belt, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, probably some Ohio, trying to help Bernie Moreno there, the good Senate candidate. And I think that he could be really a great vice president. I don't think that he's going to perhaps go quite as far as the Dick Cheney model of essentially being the president. but I do think he's going to be tasked with some very serious shit. I don't think that he's just going to be a figurehead. I think that he's going to be doing a lot of coordination for Trump, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to immigration stuff.
Yes.
I think also fixing the military, because he's got the experience that somebody's been 100%. Through it all. Whoever Trump picks as 100%. His new SecDef and assistant secretaries are obviously going to be important. But stockpiles think having him.
Well, not only that, but killing the woke shit. I'll tell you what, I heard some recent things from a friend in the military about how bad things are getting in there, and it is not good. I will tell you that.
Yeah.
Even worse than before. And before was bad.
Mm-hmm. It'll be, it's hard to say what will happen, but I would, obviously we've covered and reported on all the issues with retention and recruitment goals in the military since Biden took over.
Yep.
But I think post-election day, if/when Trump wins, I don't want to jinx us, I think there's going to be a huge surge in enlistments.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Because
people are going to...
Yep.
First of all, you don't want to be a part of a military when the commander in chief is going to either abandon you, not care if you get killed,
or get you suicide bombed.
Yeah. Yeah. So nobody wants to do that, but knowing that you're going to be that the commander in chief and the rest of his administration and the DHS brass will have your back. And actually, the other thing too is all these people, people who are careers who are in the military for a long time, they hate the fact that Joe Biden doesn't let them do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
The military is the greatest, most lethal fighting force in the world.
Just let us do the killing.
And Joe Biden doesn't let him do anything. He didn't let him go after the Houthis, as they're basically shutting down the Red Sea with their attacks on all the ships there. Doesn't let him do anything retributively for, again, three Americans were killed on that attack on the base in northern Jordan earlier this year. And Biden never even talks about that. He went to the dignified transfer ceremony and then had the nerve of the debate to say Americans haven't died on his watch.
Yeah.
And it's nobody wants to be a part of that, but I feel a lot of the problems with the military in terms of the retention and recruitment will change with Trump back in.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it helps when you don't have a commander in chief that hates you, you know?
Well, not to mention
the brass did not get along.
The new defense secretary will be a very, very key position for Trump to fill with someone reliable and not a fucking traitor.
He's not going to go behind his back and warn China.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think we were very high on Mad Dog Mattis, and then he turned out to be pretty unloyal, I'd say, to the hopes or the direction and orders of the commander-in-chief. I think Mattis was a good war fighter, but I think he also had his own agenda, which turned out to be pretty lame. And then basically after that, I can't remember, what did he have? Esper?
Esper, yeah.
And he sucked
ass. It was all deep state people after
that. And then Esper left after January 6th, because, of course, even though half of it was his fault. Who was it after that? I forget. It was some holdover. And then Austin. Austin, we had destroying our military. But yeah, I think J.D. Vance is a really solid pick. I think the most interesting thing about this is we are very familiar with J.D. Vance, but he's not that well known in general. And I think he has a really kind of interesting blank slate to write from here. And so I'm really, really looking forward to his speech tonight. Supposedly, it's going to be very heavily based on his life story, which his life story obviously made into a book and movie is something in itself. Grew up in a troubled family, fought his way through it. Really the American dream from nothing to something. And so I think that's pretty inspirational, and that's going to be really interesting to see what happens tonight. Some other RNC stuff here. So the speakers so far, we were talking about this last night, have been really phenomenal.
Yeah.
They have put together a hell of a fucking convention so far. Every second left, you look and you have the regular politicians coming out, giving really great riling up speeches to the crowds. You have last night Nikki Haley coming out and telling her people to get in line and to vote for Trump. You may not agree with everything he says, but he has my strong endorsement and we need to put Trump in the White House.
Yeah.
You have DeSantis coming out and giving one of the speeches of the night. The crowd was juiced when he was speaking. You had Ramaswamy give a great speech. When we talk about unity, the GOP unity, the Republican unity right now, is sky high, obviously assisted by the fact that they tried to kill our fucking guy on Friday.
And your gal, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's Sarah Huckabee.
Van Jones even said her
who
her
looks
dress,
great by the way.
Van Jones even said her dress was brilliant. And you know, you've always I think you've talked about in past episodes that she has presidential timber, and you saw a little glimpse of that last night. Absolutely.
I totally agree with that. You know, she was one of my picks for VP potentially. But she's doing a great job down in Arkansas. She's fighting the Chinese. Yeah. I mean, she's doing a great job. Mm-hmm. But you also had Ramaswamy. I mean, the GOP unity right now is great. You've had great speeches from Congressman Marco Rubio last night.
That was a good speech.
That night two last night was just elite. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they really have a high bar to hit for tonight. But mm-hmm. the thing I love most so far about the RNC is the speeches by the everyday Americans.
Yes.
And if you're not watching on the – if you're watching on the networks – I'm not sure how much of this they're carrying. Watching it on C-SPAN because I prefer to have no commentary, no commercials. I want to see the live camera feed of the floor and the live audio of the floor and kind of see what's going on there. I love the musical interludes. They're showing everybody dancing, having a great time. I don't need some talking heads on Fox or MSNBC or CNN to tell me what I should be thinking about what's happening at the RNC. But the everyday American speeches have been elite.
Yeah.
Whoever picked these people did a phenomenal job, and their stories have been tearjerkers, inspirational. I mean, you've had – I think my favorite one last night was – oh, I can't remember her name.
Is it the Peruvian lady?
No, the anti-crime
activist. Oh, yeah, yeah,
from New York City.
Yeah.
Her – oh, I can't remember her name. It was – oh, man.
Basically,
here it is. It's Madeline Brame.
Yeah.
Madeline Brame.
Took a blowtorch.
She brought down
DAs,
the
man.
House.
Yeah.
Her son, an Afghanistan war veteran, fought the Taliban, came back home, and then was brutally murdered in New York City. And in New York City, the DA, Alvin Bragg, delivered no justice to her and her family, let the criminals go, and she went on a roll about how he's terrible, the Democrats are destroying our cities. You know, they want crime. The one line I thought that was really just a top-notch line was, how many people in this room are sick and tired of being sick and tired? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that really resonates. You know, multiple people I talked to said they were tearing up. You had a mother of her son died of a fentanyl overdose, 15-year-old kid. You had... Rachel Morin's brother, Rachel Morin, was the sweet woman killed here in Maryland
last year,
by an illegal immigrant. One of what was determined to be one of the most heinous crimes ever committed in the state of Maryland. It's, you know, they need to highlight what Joe Biden has done to this country, and what the Democrats are doing to this country.
Doing well.
Like you said last night, Spencer, we were talking about this. You don't want every speech to be sad and a tearjerker, but it's important to show that he's destroying the country. He's destroying Americans' lives and putting our citizens last. Mm-hmm. And I think they're doing a really great job of that. The J.D. Vance speech tonight, I think you have Trump Jr., the East Palestine mayor.
Yeah.
Another
very much entire forgotten community by the Biden administration. And it took Pete Buttigieg however long to get there, and Joe Biden another, like, 2 years, basically.
Yep.
I think my take so far on the speakers, agree with everything you've said, but I think when you, again, we've only had the first two nights so far, but the first
and
two
the
nights...
And the bigger two nights are now, theoretically, but...
But you look at the first two nights, and for me, I think I put this in the live blog last night, but looking at all the speakers... who are not the everyday Americans. So you have Nikki Haley, Ron DeSantis, Vivek Ramaswamy, the three people who were pretty confrontational about Trump not being the guy who should be the nominee, who have put all that aside and endorsed him and explained why they think their supporters should. You have the Teamsters president on Monday delivering the first speech to a Republican National Convention in 120 and then even Amber Rose getting up and speaking and delivering what I think was actually a really good speech about how
I have thoughts on
I am one of who are probably a lot of people who are going to vote or are planning to vote for Biden in November, who were doing it because they were lied to and they bought everything else. And unless, in her case, it was her father, but unless they have someone in their life who sort of shakes you out of it and it's like, hey, they're not telling you the truth about this person.
Wake the fuck up.
Yes. And so you take Amber Rose, the Teamsters president, the Nikki Haley, I think Nikki Haley specifically, because her fight seemed so much more bitter with Trump because she was in it so much longer and was still, you know, people were attacking her because she was still in it. So many people were voting for her in the primaries that she still ran in. All these people spoke, and it just seems like the convention is just this massive permission slip to, like, vote for Trump. Like, all these people that you may have agreed with or followed or that you like or that you know, whether you're a union member or you're somebody who's like Amber Rose, whoever you are, you're a Nikki Haley supporter, the whole point of this convention is get over it and vote for Donald Trump.
Yep.
I mean, and Frank Luntz mentioned that.
Yeah.
He was like, this is something I've never seen at a Republican convention, noting, you know, how there are people sporting bluer collars in, you know, on the convention floor, African-Americans, and just, you know, just how Trump has realigned the party to a truly diverse
and all these people,
coalition.
You don't have to be an ultra MAGA person who has been at every Trump rally since 2015 to vote for Donald Trump.
No.
You can be somebody who's looking around and saying, this is bad.
Yeah.
I'm scared. I'm scared for my kids.
Yeah.
I'm scared for myself. I'm scared for my business. All these things. And just vote for the guy who's not going to screw you over for another 4 years.
Yeah.
And this brings up, I want to read that Frank Luntz tweet.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I paraphrase.
Sorry.
You know, I'm riled up about this point with a certain number of people. But Frank Luntz said, last night voters saw a Republican Party that they and I have never seen before. A stage filled with hardworking taxpayers, African Americans, working women, union members, and delegates dancing in the aisles. Speeches bashing corporate America and the status quo. We witnessed the realignment of American politics, Trump style. And you have a number of people out there who oppose this. And they are the traditional establishment, corporate cronyism, air quote conservatism, people. And you have a certain number of people on the hardcore Christian conservative right who disagree what's going on here, not only with what was outlined in the party platform, but also with some of the programming at the RNC. It started with the party platform. We've kind of addressed that somewhat already. But, you know, this is what's called building a coalition. You build a winning coalition by attracting new voters to your party.
Yeah.
Okay? Having the union Teamsters president speak at the RNC, which hasn't been done in over 40 years, is a monumental achievement. He has not been invited to the DNC.
No, he hasn't.
They haven't endorsed Biden, which they have not endorsed a Republican or not endorsed a Democrat in decades. If that happens and Trump cracks the union vote in the Rust Belt, the election is over.
Oh, man.
Okay?
Oh, my God.
Amber Rose, yes, she has an unsavory entrepreneurship, okay? I personally think people should be able to do whatever the fuck they want.
I think,
okay, I'm just saying, that's their criticism. That's their criticism. The Christian conservative, right, you know, of which I am a Christian and I am a conservative, wouldn't consider myself to be on that, maybe that hardcore of the aisle.
Appeal
right?
to heaven.
They say that people like Amber Rose should never be invited to speak at the RNC.
Yeah.
Well, I think personally that someone from Philadelphia who has a following of millions of people on social media and a very influential person who has seen the light and was a extremely hardcore liberal, a woke liberal, and now become a Trump supporter, not necessarily a Republican for life, but someone who sees the light and says, wow, they lied about Trump. The liberal media are a bunch of liars. I'm going to vote for Trump. MAGA is filled with love. All you people are great people. I've seen nothing but love from Trump supporters. That's a powerful message to millions of people. Why would you not embrace that?
Yeah.
Okay. Then the people, and particularly one in particular, Jenna Ellis, who I can't fucking stand. Okay. She does nothing but whine and complain and is a rhino and doesn't support Trump. And she is the worst, the absolute worst. Okay. She goes out there and criticizes the RNC for allowing Harmeet Dhillon, one of the best conservatives I've ever known and have the pleasure of knowing.
And the most effective.
effective, has done more for our party and for conservatism and for defending patriots who are unable to defend themselves legally than anyone I've ever met, mm-hmm. is invited to go out there and do a traditional Sikh prayer. Sikhs are good people.
Oh,
they, yeah. They love this country. They've come here and is allowed to do this. People like Jenna Ellis said, oh, that should never happen. It's a disgrace.
I think she called it a satanic prayer.
Oh, a satanic prayer.
Did
yeah,
she
yeah,
call
yeah.
it that? Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
What's a disgrace is people like Jenna Ellis saying that. And Harmeet is a great American, has done unbelievable things for us. And if she's invited to go up there and do that prayer, she should be allowed to do that because this is America. Okay? Freedom of religion in this country.
Yes.
Okay.
I thought we cared about that and treasured that.
Yeah. What, Sikhs can't vote for President Trump? Is that what I'm hearing? If you're not a white Christian, are you not allowed to come to the RNC? I mean, this is just fucking ridiculous. And the people that are out there say, oh, I'll stay home. If you want to enable Democrats over this, then you deserve what's coming.
Yeah.
You deserve to be thrown in the camps that these Democrats want of conservatives.
There's nothing principled about losing in my
No, book. No. There's not.
I mean, I don't get these people. I mean,
take your principles, stretch in the gulag.
You know, and everybody knows I am as stubborn and as thick-skulled as they come.
You?
But I, yeah, I know, right? But I just find this so reprehensible what's happening here.
Yeah.
And that the you know, last night they played a rap video. A Trump rap video to the tune of Ice Ice Baby.
That's pretty
good. I wonder if they got royalties for that. But she, of course, is on there complaining about that. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
It was engaging the youth, which we desperately need. We need to bring new voters into the Republican Party. We need to smash the Obama and leftist coalition and get a winning coalition in this country, a coalition that could not only carry Trump to the presidency, but carry Republicans across the country into office and continue for a generation.
And you're not going to do that by bashing gay marriage and
other
stuff. It's just like, that's the thing of like not being able to see the forest for the trees. You know, it's just like, you wouldn't be bitching if you're like, if your platform worked 20 years ago. We tried that, it didn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
We lost. We lost in 12.
As I've always said, if the gays want to get married and be miserable as the rest of everyone else, be my fucking guest. And on the abortion issue, the national abortion ban, sorry, that's a losing issue. Okay?
Yeah.
We're trying to win elections here.
Kansas
and the abortion issue is the worst issue possible for us, and you can be as pro-life as you want to be, but the idea of getting rid of Roe v. Wade was that the issue would go back to the states. Okay? I don't think you're ever going to see a national abortion ban. But not only that, is that practical policy?
Yeah, it's not.
I mean,
sorry.
You know, what are we talking about?
And I know
here?
We're going to get bashed by the pro-lifers for saying that.
Sure.
I don't care. It's like it's.
You can have reasonable ideas of what you want as far as restrictions on abortion, right? There's a debate over when it should be in as far as the weeks go.
Yeah.
But I just don't get. I don't get the absolutism here and the inability to see that in politics there is a natural give and take of things here.
There's political realities. I mean, and it's the reason why Kansas, which is ruby red, and Ohio, which has become ruby red, rejected the pro-life, you know, amendments to their constitution. I mean, Kansas already has a ban at 20 weeks. There's no state or federal funding. There's parental consent laws. And I'm pretty sure when that came up, you know, in the voter initiative, a lot of Republicans were like, you know what?
In Florida,
We have this settled already. I don't think we need any more of this. And
it did. In Florida, a state that Republicans are going to win by 10-plus points this year. Trump's going to win by more than 10 points in Florida. You can take that to the bank.
Yeah.
We lead by more than 1 million voters there. It is very likely that the overturning of the 6-week abortion ban by constitutional amendment is going to take place with 60% of the vote.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a 20-point swing in there.
Yeah.
Okay? It's just not a winning issue.
Yeah.
And you can be as pro-life as you want. Of course, I'm pro-life. But you have to look at the political realities of where we are and stop with the outright just idealism, right? I am a political realist, right? I'm calling it as I see it here. And this is such a losing, get-stuck-in-the-mud issue. And when... I don't understand.
When we get stuck in the mud, it gets so ugly for us.
It's
so bad.
I don't understand the want to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And we won. We won. We got rid of Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
Right? If the blue states want to set their weeks and the red states want to set their weeks, I think, go ahead, states' rights issue. Maybe we do set a 16-week limit at the national level, right? And but outright total ban?
Yeah.
How is that a good plank to have in the party platform? And also, by the way, the party platform's it's fucking useless anyway. What do you think? Trump's going to have it printed out on a fucking sheet on the Oval Office desk?
I can't do that. It's against the party platform.
Yeah. Right. I mean, really, you know? And it's just, you know, I love the Christian conservative right, but sometimes it's a little bit exhausting when we're trying to develop a winning coalition.
You
got
to win. And it's just – and I
we
know,
need young
listen,
people.
I know I'm going to get raked over the coals for this, but some of those people are just as annoying as the pro-abortion folks that we see on the other end of the
picket
line.
I agree.
Like, you know, like just Jesus Christ.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. Like there are
– you know, and of course it's important to be a moral nation, right? And Christianity, the whole deal. But like freedom of religion, all of that, it's so important and – I just hate the whining and the stuck in the mud bullshit of we didn't get our way, so we're going to support Democrats. Oh yeah, that's
we're going to burn the nation down because we didn't get our way. Yep. That sounds
exactly. So J.D. Vance speech tonight, it's going to be a banger. We got the Trump speech tomorrow night. Very interesting that the news that Trump rewrote the speech. What do you think? You know, apparently it's going to be a very unifying speech, not divisive, not as bashing on Biden as was before. What do you think is going to come out of that, Spence?
I think he might be reading the room and seeing that Joe Biden is not going to be his opponent in November and doesn't want to use the whole thing to make a speech about how Joe Biden is this senile failure of a president who's destroyed our country, has embarrassed us on the world stage, has, you know, caused or has policies that have led to the deaths of so many Americans with fentanyl and illegal alien crime and all that stuff. I think it's going to be a broader brush about America and Americans, probably specifically, because he's always really strong on that. I remember his Independence Day speeches while he was in office were some of my favorites that he gave, because you can tell that this man just loves his country so much. And he amps himself up talking about it. And so I think he doesn't want to make all of the sound bites ones that would become irrelevant if he's not running against Joe Biden on the ballot in November. And I do think, you know, we talked about how different he looked when he walked in on the first night of the RNC after what happened on Saturday. And I think he may have had a little bit of a change of heart, or not necessarily a change of heart, but just has realized sort of priorities-wise, like what the American people want to hear at a time like this. Which is more than Joe Biden and any Democrat have done in terms of changing their tact, because Karine Jean-Pierre even said this week that Joe Biden was not going to change his rhetoric, even though he had just spoken from the Oval Office saying, we need to change our rhetoric.
Classic.
Yeah, I know.
That's an interesting theory. I think it could be very right on that.
Like, he's still going to mention Joe Biden, because he has to explain who did all this.
Sure.
But I think it's not going to be all Biden all the time.
Yeah. I think...
the Democratic Party overall.
Yeah.
Because
they can put anybody they want on the top of the ticket. Yeah. It doesn't change the fact that these are their policies. Open borders, massive regulation, upending the Supreme Court now, all of this disaster. That's what any, whether it's Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, Gavin Newsom.
Broad brush. Because even the Democrats are now resigned to the fact that maybe our strategy now, these last 16 weeks, is check on Trump.
Yeah.
So like, they're not even talking. Like, okay, you know, listen, the Biden's gone. Like, I got to focus on my shit in my district. So you know what? By just, no. These people are on the same side. They just don't have their senile leader ahead at the head of the table. So.
I think Trump particularly sees this as a moment where he can not only try to bring America together, because I think that deep down that's what his real goal is here, is to save America, heal America, make America safe again, strong again, wealthy again, great again, of course. But that he sees this as the opportunity to go, you know, come out above it.
Yeah.
In the aftermath of the assassination attempt, and really seal the deal here and show his more tempered side and what the independents want to see, and really just seal the deal.
Yeah.
I think that's what he sees this as. And, you know, maybe he doesn't want to get shot again.
Kind of like the Florida Panthers in the Stanley Cup final. Graceful brutality.
That's a terrible analogy. Why would you even ruin the moment like that?
Sorry.
But okay, we're gonna finish up here. any other thoughts on the state of the 2024 race? Obviously, you know, Trump's in a good position. Republicans are in a good position. Long way to go.
Yeah, I think
criteria. Long way to go.
Long way to go. I think late breaking news this hour. We talked about the VP debate earlier.
Has there been stuff occurring?
Shit. Yes. There's been a lot of breaking news actually since we've been in here. But specifically, really? Well, the Secret Service knew 10 minutes before Trump took the stage that there was a threat to his life at the rally.
What?
That's according to the briefing from Senator, or the briefing that senators got today, that were given a timeline.
What?
The Secret Service knew. So that's one major piece of news. The other major piece of news is that J.D. Vance and the Trump campaign are not committing to a debate with the vice president because they don't know who it's going to be yet, which is brilliant political messaging.
Oh, that's interesting.
Just sort of needling at the fact that it might not be Kamala Harris.
Wow, that's interesting.
Republicans have never been in a better place. This convention has shown that we're the most unified we've ever been, and also trying to draw the broadest base of support we've ever had, maybe. Meanwhile, you have Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama sending their minions like George Clooney and Adam Schiff out to sow more discord among the Democrats. They don't know who their candidates are going to be either. It's a mess. And it's delightful. The Schadenfreude is at level 75 right now.
If you had told me 6 months ago that the Democrats would be this fractured,
And fractured along lines that, again, Obama was the president. Biden was his vice president.
Exactly.
And now
he's destroyed that coalition. I mean, I don't think since 1968 we've seen the Democrats this splintered.
Hillary Clinton has to be feeling like maybe she wants to run again, watching this coalition implode.
Well, they're all hoping for Michelle probably to save them.
I don't think that's gonna happen.
I don't understand why anyone would think this is a woman who never wanted to be a part of public life. Was kind of half-assed regarding the whole, half-hearted I should say, regarding the whole 08 run. Didn't really want her husband to win, I don't think, but it is what it is.
No, listen, especially after what's happened here the last week with Trump, the assassination attempt, his rising popularity, the RNC, all of that, there is no way that she's coming out of retirement to be a sacrificial lamb like that. And I think maybe she could put up a good fight, but I don't think that that's going to happen. On that note, we're going to wrap up here. We've gone quite long. We got to get this to Mr. Producer here for production. So, of course, if you enjoy Triggered and want it uncensored, you know what to do. Become a Town Hall VIP member at townhallvip.com. Use the promo code MAGA24. That's MAGA24 for 60% off. Use our RNC sale that we got going right now. MAGA24, 60% off. Not going to do the whole spiel. I'm tired. It's been a really long work week. Of course, if you enjoy Triggered and have any comments, questions, concerns, any thoughts on the show today, triggered@townhall.com is the email. Thank you to all of you who are VIP members. You make what we do possible, what Spencer does on townhall.com, which, of course, we'll have full coverage for you of the rest of the RNC, live coverage at townhall.com. We love you all, and we will see you back here for another episode of Triggered next Wednesday, July 24th.
What?
See you then. What the fuck? I'm waiting on you. That's every episode. Now you decide.